Bye-bye.
Love, that is, you interlock the two.
Now stretch them quite as
soccer, and the fifth.
Quiet, please. In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
I felt like a reptile. Like a reptile. I felt like a reptile.
I think we are good now to go.
We rolling?
Yeah, rolling.
Good man. Okay. Hello and welcome to Full Reptile Radio, episode 4, hello. Take 2.
yeah. We had a bit of a technical, well, I left the fan on.
We had a fan on and the pair of us looked at each other and didn't know where the noise was coming from. We were toasty, but we were unaware that the fan was still on.
So yeah, it's a lot quieter in here now. Hopefully the sound's good.
Yeah, it should be good. So good week? How's things?
Good week, man. Working on the, well, just got the warm up for this weekend, Derek Lewis and Spivak, so go check that out on the Full Reptile channel.
Nice.
Working on a few bits, but yeah, all good, man. What about you?
Yeah, busy, man. We had the drop on Sunday, so Little Mo and Outlaw Army.
Yeah.
Obviously, when we first dropped it, it was, I think it was back end of summer, and obviously Dan was preparing for fighting Diego. So the walkout shirts, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's just the OGs of MMA that just completely relate to the walkout and having all the sponsors and stuff, and they went really well. So we reprinted those and then we did it in the hoods and sweats because it's just so cold. So that went good on Sunday. So thank you everyone that got involved. Obviously there's still a few left because we never print that many because my stock room's not big enough. So if you get one, you are one of a few. So,
yeah,
that's good.
I'll put the link in the description as well. So nice. Go get yourself one.
Yeah, cool. Well, there's those and also New Shirt. I was speaking to them this week because obviously we're sponsored again by New Shirt. So newshirt.co.uk, go and have a look. There's a lot of, it's parodies basically and cool, funny, quirky shirts.
Yeah, they've got some really cool prints, funny prints, yeah.
I think if you are in a crowd wearing one of them, you pick out your people immediately because if they see you wearing a Kimura shirt or a Backyard Bears wrestling shirt, it doesn't necessarily say what it is, but the people that know,
people
they know.
People will know, yeah.
Yeah, so they've got those still flying, which is good. And obviously we're just trying to march forward into the new year, trying to get some drops taken care of, which we've got some camo bits and bobs coming. There's all sorts. It's quite exciting, dude.
Yeah, nice, man. Should we talk about some fights? I mean,
what have we got?
It's quite a big week. Well, next week obviously is UFC 284. This week we've got Derek Lewis and Spivak.
Bellator
as well, like Fedor's last fight, so that's pretty cool. Because I wanted to talk to you about Fedor because I'm not super, I wasn't really watching MMA at the point
where
he was a top dog.
Oh man,
so
the arguments you could have with any diehard fan, because obviously he was in Pride and I mean, you know what he looks like. He looks like someone's uncle that never married, never had kids, still lives with his parents. And he was this stoic kind of dude that wore like a wooden pendant round his neck. And dude, he was just a killer. And like, no real emotion. And obviously with the language barrier and everything else, it was always such an anomaly that obviously, the Pride UFC wars were pretty intense because you had a lot of people moving back and forth. And once Pride knew they had someone that the UFC wanted, they made it really difficult. And obviously, Fedor was there. That was their golden ticket. And I know when they acquired Pride, obviously, they never got Fedor. They thought it'd be pretty simple that obviously these people are going to go across. And you got the likes of Shogun and Overeem and Hunt and Krokop and all these cool guys. But ultimately, the argument always was, who is the baddest man on the planet?
Yeah.
And obviously with Fedor being heavyweight, I think he was heavyweight at the time, it was always, what about Randy Couture? And so Pride happened and he put his mark on that. But obviously we're talking a long time ago, pre-USADA, pre a lot of rules and a lot of regulations. And so like, you can't discount what happened, but it was a different era. And then they did Affliction. And the thing that kind of bolstered Fedor more than anything was Affliction 1, the main event was Fedor against Tim Sylvia. So Tim Sylvia, again, odd dude, kind of strange, quite well known for like wearing his belt to the supermarket and stuff. But at the time, was the heavyweight division wasn't really stacked. Frank Mir had his motorbike accident, and so he was out. And then the Sylvia and Orlovsky wars kind of happened. And as it went, I mean, Orlovsky won, and then Sylvia won twice. So in their trilogy, Sylvia came on top, which really, everyone liked Orlovsky because he was a stacked dude. He had the fangs, he had long hair, and he was a beast. So because Affliction was like this brand new thing, Tim Sylvia and Orlovsky were free agents at the time because Tim Sylvia had been smashed up by Randy. Randy came out of retirement just to prove to everyone that he's
I was going to say, I'll get his record up because...
Who's Sylvia?
No.
Fedor.
Fedor's.
Insane. Yeah, yeah. So while Fedor is this really, really big figure in Pride, when he came over and it was Affliction, he thought, okay, so the UFC stance in the red corner, if you like, is Tim Sylvia. So you know he's a good fighter. As much as you look strange, he's a bit of an odd dude, he's got a chance. And Fedor just steamrolled him. It was literally like he hardly touched him.
So whereabouts would this fight be?
That was Affliction 1.
Affliction 1. Yeah, because I never realised they actually didn't fight on the
So
on
these
the
are
UFC.
All Pride. Affliction 1, Tim Sylvia. So it'd be round 1, 36 seconds.
Ah, right. Yeah, okay.
All right.
Yeah.
So you imagine the question that has always been flying about is Fedor the best in the world? And Tim Sylvia was the heavyweight champ. I mean, Randy basically dominated him on the ground and just smothered him and suffocated him the way he knows how. I mean, he caught inside low left leg kick, overhand right was one of the sweetest combinations Randy ever threw. So fast forward from Tim Sylvia, you can quite easily in your brain think, yeah, well, he's not the kind of guy to do it. We'll put all of our chips on Orlovsky. And again, Orlovsky was free agent, went over to Affliction, and he was looking like he was piecing Fedor up.
Yeah.
Went for a flying knee, and Fedor just, you know, on Snatch, where Brad Pitt does that tiger punch and just moves out of the way.
Right. Yeah,
you don't really see anything land at the beginning. Fedor did that to Orlovsky, and you can't even see it. Like, he literally, and then Orlovsky goes from a flying knee into a crumpled heap. And so the question was kind of answered because you've got two of the UFC's best heavyweights. I mean, Dana's argument at the time was like, yeah, well, they're not in the UFC for a reason, which is an easy avenue. And then obviously Fedor ended up going over to Strikeforce. And
yeah, it's odd because I thought he was, I thought he fought in the UFC, like, Fedor, but obviously he never did. No. But yeah, his career, when you look at his record, is like insane, because I was watching Ariel's show last night and he was on there doing an interview, and I just didn't realise how much of a legend he was, to be honest. Like, I think because, like, for a lot of fans, like me especially, I got into like MMA probably through like watching McGregor, you know, and that kind of generation. So I never really saw Fedor at his like highest point, I guess.
Yeah, and the problem was, to a lot of people, he never had a highest point because he always dominated wherever he was. But because the UFC has got such a broad net, it was kind of frustrating because as much as it's such an unknown, and because you can never rewind and go back and say, oh, look, because the people that beat him, if you go down, Vadum got dropped by the UFC. So then Vadum was fighting him triangled him.
Three losses in a row.
Mate, this was insane. Like, insane. Because he caught him in an amazing triangle. And that kind of catapulted Vadum back to the UFC eventually to obviously capture the title and reign for a little while. But Bigfoot is just a big, big dude. And obviously he made quite a mess of Fedor, which was the stoppage, which a lot of the Fedor diehards could kind of justify, like, look, it's a doctor stoppage.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, he got caught in a submission. Not everyone's. But then Dan Henderson was the first person to catch him with a real crisp, like almost a walk-off knockout. So if you imagine the so Champ has beat him, you can justify that the whole mm-hmm. time. When you drop into Jeff Monson, like Jeff Monson has been around forever and is an old dude. Even Pedro Hizo, you're going back to M1, Pedro Hizo was like UFC startup. And all these, Fabio Maldonado was renowned for being a punching bag. He was good and he was tough, but he's not the same as Dan Henderson and Vadum. But then you start getting your names that you can recognize again. So like Frank Mir left the UFC, came across.
Yeah, that's when they're all kind of towards the end of their career though.
Exactly.
At this point.
Exactly. So
Frank Mir, like Chael Sonnen, that was Chael's last fight, wasn't it?
All of them. Yeah, all of them. So like Ryan Bader, Sonnen, Mir, even Matt Mitrione. Like they're all, the question never got answered in my opinion, because you can't turn back time. It's like, would Mike Tyson beat Anthony Joshua? Who the fuck knows? Mm. Do you know what I mean? So it's one of them that, I mean, I know he's fighting Ryan Bader.
Yeah, how do you think he fares against? Because he's lost to him. He lost back in 2019.
Yeah. But look, a real quick.
Yeah. Is this Bader's last fight as well? Is he retiring?
I don't know.
Yeah, I think I swear I saw that somewhere.
I mean, Bader's gone over. He's gone from UFC because at one point, Ryan Bader was the guy that if you beat him, you got a title shot.
Yeah, because I think they were talking about if whoever wins, it will still be a vacant belt.
Okay.
Or was that just Fedor? I don't know. Yeah, because if Fedor wins, obviously it's his last fight.
He's walking away.
It'll still be a vacant belt.
So. Doing a GSP.
Yeah.
See you, Mr. Bisping. I don't even want this belt.
But interestingly, I mean, I don't think it will happen, but if it's vacant, imagine if like Ngannou just stepped in and just rained Bellator.
Mate, it'd be there for the taking, wouldn't it? And this is it.
They pay him enough, I mean.
That's all it is. And I think it's looking at what Ngannou was looking for, it wasn't necessarily just the cash.
Mm.
It was a little bit more fairness or just a little bit more, let's share the pie. And I don't think he was asking for the moon on a stick. And I suppose anywhere else, somewhere like PFL, Bellator, ONE, any of these other guys can really take a massive look at that. Because let's say, even if you look at sponsors back in the day, so when I used to do the banners, some people's banners, I think it was Brendan Schaub that said they're worth 20 grand. Now, the ones I was doing, there was thousands of pounds in it, but not necessarily always 20 grand. And the UFC would charge, if you were, I don't know, Jamie's Kia Garage.
Yeah.
I think you had to pay something like 25 grand a year. So then...
What, so you had to pay the UFC?
You had to pay the UFC like a retainer. Sponsors. That's right. But then, so like if you look at Fear the Fighter, Praetorian, Venom, all these guys, like even if you go back to UFC Knots back in the day, like there was banners that I was doing and it was like DeMarcus Johnson against Gunny Nelson and they're both sponsored by either Fear the Fighter or Venom or whoever, I can't remember exactly the fighters were. But like they're being sponsored by the same people to fight. And it's like doing roulette and putting it on red and black. Do you know what I mean? So
it's a bit of a backward investment though, isn't it? If you're making someone pay you
up front.
Yeah. To advertise the companies that are would improve your camp, would improve everything about you as a fighter. Like,
and you're doing it both sides.
Yeah. It's strange.
It was really strange. But then obviously once they've paid their retainer, they're now having to pay the fighter. And obviously it's either some fighter would get, say, kit or training camp or other bits. Other people would get kit and money. But ultimately, I don't see a lot of harm that, let's say UFC, I don't know, what's the Spivak and Lewis, right? If they've got the Reebok and or the Venom and the Rock shoes, even if they made a banner that had half a dozen other sponsors that are local to them. So I don't know, different outlets or gyms or like Stefan Struve once had Dave's Plastering, which is, look, he's getting his name out there. He's seen himself on telly. He's giving you a few hundred quid, couple of grand, whatever it is. Why would the UFC need to stop that? Like, they're still getting paid. They're still getting, they're not endorsing clothes. They're not endorsing shoes. They are still being a athlete and all the rest of it. But it's just like that, like a little moonlight, like a little private that they're doing on the side, just because they're on this platform. It's not derogatory to the UFC. But yeah, Dana was always really vocal about hating it.
It's odd because I think the UFC Octagon is the most sponsored playing surface.
Really?
In all of sports. Pretty sure.
Yeah, and it's got... But the thing is, so they're keen to get money.
You think about the amount of sponsors that are on the UFC canvas.
Oh, dude,
and
it's
then
insane.
On the post.
Which on every topper.
Yeah, yeah.
On every pillar.
Yeah.
Around the edge, around the centre, and then you've got the black line and then the big one in the middle.
Mm.
I'd love to know how much they get.
I suppose if you've got, like, all of that and then the fighters as well wearing like a short full of sponsors.
Oh no, I'm not saying that they have to have it printed.
Yeah, okay.
Just a banner,
yeah,
just a banner. Just as a nod. So like, let's say you get 500 quid per sponsor.
Mm.
Like, because we know that fighter pay is a big thing. Surviving in the fighter world is a big thing if something drops out or whatever it is. Like Cowboy was always famous for having a Budweiser sponsor and a Monster sponsor. Regardless of where he was always repping the brand. A bit like DC's with Rob. You know Robin Big from the Fantasy Factory.
No.
Rob Dyrdek. Thank you. Yeah, Rob Dyrdek was a big, he was sponsored by DC's as a skater from being like 12. But like if the UFC are keen to draw in as much money as they can, which they are, that's a good business idea, isn't it? So you've got an area for sponsoring. So they're getting that. But then it's like the people that work for them and make them the money and justify the reason why the sponsors are there aren't allowed to get their little bit on the side. And I know there was a lot more logistics around it that people had to sign stuff off and review it. Like, you know, when Dennis Hallman got into the cage in a pair of Superman shorts, did you ever see that?
No, I've never seen it. No.
Dude, he wore a pair of pants in the Octagon and Dana was fucking furious. Cause I mean, he looked like he just stepped off the beach and it was bad. It was really bad.
What, as like his fighting shorts?
Yeah, his fight shorts were pants.
Okay.
Just a pair of like bright blue Superman pants. And it was one of them where that had slipped through the net. And because obviously the sponsorship side of things and because people used to take, they had to take their shorts to be signed off. They had to take their shirts to be signed off. They had to take banners and all the rest of it. Obviously someone has to sit there and see that and sort of go through it all. Whereas I think as a banner, with it being a digital element that you could literally send off to go, this is Jimmy's, this is Dan's, this is Paul Daly's, whoever, it's quite easy. But it's hard when someone's wanting to make the money for themselves, but no, it's not all right for you to do.
Yeah, yeah, for sure, yeah. It's a bit, yeah.
It's weird, isn't it?
Mm.
But
yeah.
How did we get there? Was that from Fedor?
I don't know, from Fedor and...
Ryan Bader.
Bader.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I think Fedor's quite... He's older now, and he got a flash knockout from Bader. And I think psychologically, if he can get past the first minute, because a couple of the knockouts that he's suffered are early doors.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because he's always relied on his chin so heavily and it's been such a strong chin that he's never really had to worry. I don't want him to get into that Chuck Liddell territory where he's getting knocked out without even knowing it. But I'm still interested. I still want to see it, man.
Yeah. I mean, they're quite evenly matched, I think, in terms of like stature and stuff as well. Because I mean, Fedor's not like the biggest heavyweight. I don't think Bader is really either.
It's just the youth on the side of Bader.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And I don't think he's suffered as much trauma. Whereas obviously Fedor is, because he's older, he's been around longer and he did the Pride circuit. He did the Affliction circuit, did the M1 circuit. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see because I always kind of feel sad for Bader because he reigned on top of the Bellator division. But I don't think it has ever justified or settled in his own mind that he's done it because it wasn't the UFC.
Right, yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, was there a lot of hype around Bader when he first came around? Like,
he was in Ultimate Fighter and he was good. And I think he fought Vinny Margulies, who is, I think I'm pronouncing that right. He was a real good jiu-jitsu player and just bingoed him in the finale. And then he was a bit like a Bisping at the gatekeeper.
Mm.
But the majority of people that beat him in the high level went on to fight for a title. So John Jones beat him.
Yeah, yeah.
Title shot won. I think Shogun beat him. But he was always just on the edge. But
yeah, I think Glover beat him as well.
Yeah, and then straight in. And it was that title shot. And it was just because his character wasn't... At the time when you've got your John Joneses and your Glovers and your Shoguns and Lyoto Machidas and stuff, there was a lot more narrative and hype. Whereas, yeah, Bader seemed like a nice dude, but wasn't necessarily pushing it that much.
Yeah.
Obviously, he was focusing on fighting.
Mm.
So his Bellator career has been impressive, but there's always like an asterisk next to it because it's, well, yeah, but you didn't. Same as Fedor, really. Yeah, but you didn't do it here.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I don't know about, I think Fedor, it was interesting he was talking about, obviously never fight for the UFC, and I don't think it really matters to him too much. No. I mean, people still hold him in high regard, like as one of, well, probably the best in some people's opinion, heavyweight anyway of all time.
Well, that's it.
So it's, yeah. So I don't think it's, it. I don't think it taints his like legacy or anything
not
like
that. Not at all. As a fan, I was always just curious,
yeah.
And especially when the Randy talks were on the line, because obviously Randy was an older dude. He'd come back, he'd smashed Tim Sylvia, he then beat Gonzaga to retain the title, then had to fight Brock. And when you put Randy and Brock next to each other, it's like this Mr. T figure and and this Darth Maul. Do you know? It was
yeah.
It was kind of like an abuse. That because he hit him and he kind of hit him at the back of the head. Randy was known for stifling people and obviously dirty boxing and Greco-Roman grappling and all the rest of it. And he was really good at dominating and smothering. But because Brock was like trying to smother a sofa, there's too much of him. Do you know what I mean? And because he's got that,
his back massive. He's yeah. Like a, yeah.
And it's huge. USADA again. Do you know what I mean? So it's not like we know that Brock wasn't into pixie dust. He really liked it. He loved the smell of it. He loved the taste of it. Do you know what I mean? So it was perfect at the time to go, all right, well, we've got Randy, so he's not our number one at the minute, and you got Fedor, which you think is the best. And it could have been a really good fight. But I think with someone like Fedor, he'd made his peace with it years ago because he's a bit like Khabib, where it's not necessarily the money.
Yeah, and he still beat the best like opposition of his time.
Of course.
Like regardless of fighting the UFC, fought him in Pride and, you know, Bellator. And
or even if he's not beat them, he's fought them. And like with anyone with a flash knockout, like if you get knocked out in 30 seconds, that doesn't necessarily represent the fight. It's just, it was, I'm not going to say a lucky punch, but it was one of them that your opportunity was taken away from you prematurely in a way, because you've trained for everything, but there is that time when you can get caught because you weren't quite in the right position. You weren't quite doing something right. So it's kind of sad because, like against Dan Henderson, Strikeforce champ, UFC champ, Pride champ, Pride double champ, then beat Fedor. That just put Henderson so far up the pillar.
It's quite hard to pinpoint, like, I would say, you know, like the best ever in any division, because obviously some people don't get the opportunity to fight, you know, in like one championship.
Yeah.
You've got like some really good flyweights. I mean, like guys like Rod Tang. And I mean, I know that he's more like Muay Thai and based kickboxing, but you've got people like that who would never fight someone, and they're like a Moreno or.
Yeah.
So it's hard to really say who is the best.
Yeah.
And there's some people just don't get the chance to fight.
No. And the whole sport has kind of, it's progressed so fast. So that like, Jiu-Jitsu was this thing that popped up out of nowhere for a lot of people.
Mm.
So when the Gracies came along and you've got someone, you can literally look at anyone at UFC 1. And if you didn't have any knowledge about the sport at the time or anything, you go, who's going to lose? I think majority of people would have said, that little guy there, he's like 15.
Mm.
So that was this thing that changed the outlook of a lot of bits. But then you got the Matt Hughes era and the Tito era, which was like ground and pound. So there was a lot of that. And then you can move forward and you got Chuck Liddell, which was using your wrestling in reverse. So you still got massive knockout power, but at the same time, that being dominated by Tito or ground and pound is kind of negated.
Takedown defense.
Right. So then when you got your John Jones oblique kicks, or you've got the crowd start shouting for knees, the education has grown massively, that now they truly are mixed martial artists.
Mm.
And we started seeing that with GSP, because he was kind of, and a bit of John, where it was like a freak athlete that you've got, you can't really beat them in any area. They're good in all of them. And because now people don't necessarily have to travel 500 miles that way to go and do your boxing and then come back and do your jiu-jitsu or whatever, it's more of a comprehensive thing that they are building champions.
Yeah, it's like they've took guys like GSP, they're not the best at like jiu-jitsu, they're not the best at boxing, but they've found, they've just crafted,
yeah,
crafted a new thing out of like old techniques and
stuff.
Yeah, it's wicked sport.
I don't think it ever takes away from the previous champions, but the previous champions compared to the current champions, it's a different world.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So like if you got even a BJ Penn or a Matt Hughes back in the day, and you've got someone like, I don't know, Ronda or Connor or any of these people like Islam or I don't know, John Jones, it's, I mean, he's done well to last as long as he has, but he sort of came in as this anomaly. So like, even like when you look at Evan Tanner, so Evan Tanner was the champion for one fight, but if you put him up against one of the top 10s now, it's just a different world.
Mm.
So it is always difficult. And I think it would be nice if we had almost like a Premier League. So instead of it being organisations of Bellator 1, PFL, Pride and all the rest of it, there was just a fight league.
What, where all the best from all the around?
Yeah, it's like a football team. So basically they all get a chance. So like you're in a ranking system. So instead of it being...
Yeah, but really, that's what the UFC though is, isn't it? It's like, if you think about it, it's like the Premier League of MMA.
It is the top of the tree.
But like, it is where arguably all the best. I don't think like all the best fighters are there. It's just that there's a much higher level throughout the divisions, yeah, in the UFC. Like a number 10 rank could potentially, yeah, beat like the number 2 ranked or...
Yeah, and I mean, I can't take away from any of the other fighters in the other organization, because like you say, that... The phrase used, the top of the tree, is the best way to explain it.
Mm.
But I think because they have got such a tight, well, all the organisations have got a tight grip on their own fighters, not just the UFC. If you could have it where it was like a World Cup, literally you got, so every champ.
Like a massive fighting tournament on a desert island.
Right. Well, mate, you imagine if Bader rocks up with his belt, then you've got Glover or Yeary or Jamal Hill with his belt. Excuse me, and then Moreno, and like,
it'd be a cool idea for a video game,
for real, because they've
like
all
Tekken, but MMA. Yeah.
They've all at one point fought shoulder to shoulder or trained with, and all these guys know each other. So it's not like you're saying, "Oh, how do you think he'd do with him?" It's like they've probably, like when Bisping fought Rockhold, they trained. When Rockhold was a Strikeforce champion and Bisping was in the UFC, they'd trained together. Yeah. They knew each other.
I think it would be like similar kind of idea, but you know where it's like teams. So like you've got gyms as teams and those teams are in a league.
Yeah.
So you've got team.
They did try that. I tried it years ago. Yeah.
All right.
Lion's Den. And they all like
a tournament.
Yeah. It was weird. Okay. I can't remember if it was Bodog or something like that, but it was like, I think Frank Shamrock had a team, Ken Shamrock had a team, and there was a few different, I can't remember all of them.
But it doesn't even have to be like the gym, it could be like the place they're from. You know, like in football, it's like Manchester United.
Yeah, like a World Cup.
Like the Manchester. Like
England and Italy and Brazil.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just, for me, it's never necessarily been about the organisation, because I'm looking forward to Fedor as much as I'm looking forward to Derek Lewis. I'll have Fedor on the TV, I'll have Derek Lewis on my iPad. I want it all. Mm. So I think sometimes, because any organisation will be quite precious over their fighter because they see this little gold nugget, they, like with the Ngannou thing, like the risk to the reward for the UFC, if you've got the baddest man on the planet that's just essentially smashing everyone and then you put him in boxing and he doesn't look good, is that going to affect pay-per-view figures when he fights again? Personally, I don't think so. But at the same time, they are always protecting their investment. Not physically, monetarily.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So, and they all do it, but I think I've seen more with Scott Coker seeming to be open to the idea of like, hey, yeah, come across that, like when he's like, MVP has gone here and there and done this and that.
Yeah, I mean, I think Ngannou, if we're going to Ngannou, I think he's definitely going to go into boxing more out of everywhere. I just think, because he's very, by interviews I've watched, and Eddie Hearn was talking about
really
it yesterday,
it.
About like he'd had chats with him, and I think he's very focused on what he wants to do. He's not really got anyone telling him in his ear what he should do. Ngannou, I mean.
Which is good, right?
Yeah, which is good. I mean, yeah, he's got a very good outlook on where he wants to go and what he wants to achieve, I think. So, and I think if like money wise, like boxing is like the super fights in boxing are like massive.
And what else has he got to prove in MMA?
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. It, like, I mean, he's champion of the UFC. I mean, you can't really get any higher.
Yeah, and justified current, champion
currently
as well.
In MMA,
yeah.
You can't get any higher than that. So, yeah, he's got nothing to prove in MMA. And if he goes into boxing, earns like a sack full of money, just even from one fight.
Mate.
And then he can go back to MMA if he wants. He can go back to Bellator. He can, you know, well, PFL.
You think the blue sky story of his reign, like if they made a film, let's say he goes to boxing and wins, like that story of like growing up and like getting over to France and really struggling and then getting all the way to the UFC. Obviously, he got beat. But the thing is that sometimes in the story is that that's the Rocky III moment. Do you know what I mean? Where you're climbing the ladder and you get knocked down, but you actually, it's how a champ comes back, which always surprise, or is what I'm always keen to see. That's, I only ever want to see what happened to GSP if he lost, because I respected him so much that I was in awe of what he could do. I was curious to see how it would affect him. Same as with Anderson and all the rest of them. But the story of Ngannou would be like, if he had a boxing fight, and then he's the type of guy that would then go back to Africa and like build schools or something.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
And I love that in someone, because he's not bound by anything, but he has been. Mm. He's suffered at the hands of so many that now he's managing to change something. It's not money that's turning
his
head.
I don't think it's the I mean,
money helps.
Money helps, but yeah, I think to solidify yourself as like the baddest man, like legacy wise, like if he steps into boxing and he's successful there, then you have kind of solidified yourself. Yeah. And then you've got the options like wherever you want to go after that. Like,
so did you say he was looking, there was rumours of Joshua?
Well, no, I don't think, it wasn't rumours. It was just on the interview yesterday with Eddie Hearn. It felt like he was kind of trying to sell that fight a little bit. And I think that would be an interesting matchup. I mean, I think it's a bad fight for Joshua, because I think he's got a lot more to sacrifice. He's got a lot more at stake than Ngannou.
Well, that's why I think.
It would still, I think if anyone out of the boxing world and those fights exist, like the Furies and, you know, Deontay Wilder, I think Joshua's probably the most winnable fight for Ngannou.
I think regardless of who he goes for, he's got to go for the biggest money first, just because if it is a thing where it's like a Conor thing where he steps in and go, all right, maybe it's not for me.
Yeah.
He's still made that payday, because like if he loses, it's not a big deal. Like, as much as you are keen to watch it, he's not necessarily a boxer at heart. He's a mixed martial artist that's trained that way for the past 10 years. But speaking of boxing, you just mentioned Fury. Have you seen that Jake Paul is fighting Tommy Fury?
Yes. When's that? That's at the end of February, isn't it?
What do you reckon?
I mean, I'll probably watch. I haven't watched any Jake Paul fights live, to be honest. I've always caught up with them, but either because they're on late or, I don't know, I just never really
been
massively interested in watching it. But I respect what he's doing and stuff. It's pretty big. But I think, and I've not really watched much of Tommy Fury, I'll be honest, but I think Jake Paul could probably get to him, like, mentally.
Psychologically.
Could get into his head.
And I think that's where the majority of the damage has already been done.
Yeah, because there's been such a long period now where it's might have happened, oh, it's not happening, oh, it's going to happen again, no, it's not. So there's been such a big build-up of, like, prolonged, like, getting in someone's head.
Yeah, and I think the only person that affects is Tommy.
Yeah.
Because he's got that lineage and he is part of the Furies.
He's either getting angry or, you know, and that can be just
doesn't help,
as bad.
Doesn't help. Look at Davison Figueiredo the other week. It's more rage that's coming out, and it's that, you know, when you try harder to get a point back, you lose it twice as quick.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't matter really whatever sport it is. Whatever your brain is clouded. I mean, it could be a video game. When you're fuming.
Nintendo Switch Golf.
Dude.
That could send me... Jesus.
Mate, yeah, I play golf on a PlayStation. We play the PGA Tour, and literally I can be winning the whole thing and then someone is chirping in my ear, David, and literally I can then just ruin the last hole.
Yeah.
And he takes it as a victory. Well, there you go. That's because I've got more skill. You think, you motherfucker. Like, it's not, but it is rage. It's you're flicking the pages of my rage book, and I'm kind of not into this.
Yeah.
Whereas Tommy Fury's got a lot more to lose. Jake Paul knows that, and he is just could you hear something else?
Yeah.
He's dangerous. And I think if Tommy Fury would have fought straight away, then you're more in the realms of when he'd fought Tyron Woodley, and then he popped for steroids or whatever he popped for.
Who?
Jake Paul.
Did he?
Yeah, the last Tyron Woodley fight.
What, he got done for?
I'm sure he did. No contest.
I didn't hear about that.
I might be wrong. Let me know if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure that the second Woodley fight was no contest.
What? Because Jake Paul got done for? Oh, right.
Yeah, because it wouldn't have affected the win if obviously he'd have beat Juicehead. So I'm pretty sure that's right, but if not, either way. But if Tommy Fury would have fought him around that time, he's still got a narrative as a get out of jail to go, yeah, well, look at the motherfucker.
Mm.
Whereas now, Jake can be more careful, drink more Prime. And then,
no, that's Logan Paul.
Yeah, well, he's not a fan of his brother for drinking, is he? But so
have you tried it?
I haven't. Have you tried it?
I had a bottle of it yesterday. I got it given free though. I didn't pay.
I'm about
over
to say,
the
how much
anything.
Did you pay for it?
Nah, nothing. But yeah, it was actually pretty good.
What colour?
I'll be honest. The tropical punch or tropical.
What colour is that? Green.
It's red.
The red one.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And it was actually really tasty.
Is it like a Gatorade? I've heard a lot of people say it's an overpriced Gatorade.
No, it's a little bit. I don't think I'm not drank too much Gatorade. I suppose I could compare it to Powerade. Yeah. All right, Powerade. It's better than Powerade.
Okay. Yeah.
Powerade tastes a little bit more chemically.
Is it still not fizzy?
Yeah,
is it?
It's still.
Okay.
But I think the guy who gave it me, he was just said it's basically just coconut water and vitamins.
Okay.
I don't know how true that is, but it's pretty tasty.
Well, how much did you pay for it?
How much would I pay for
it? So you're going to go walk the dogs?
Well, I wouldn't pay any less than what I'd pay for like a normal energy drink. Like, I don't know, what's that, like £2.50?
Yeah, okay.
£3.
Mate, I was seeing on TikTok that guy.
People were paying over like
£100 yeah. a can. And he's got the woman stood there with a receipt and she was like someone's grandma holding a can of Prime.
Mate.
In a fuel crisis. And she stood there with this two cans for like £200. You think, are you on fucking glue? Like, if this was like a publicity thing and I went to my local news agent, he was like, mate, I'm going to pass you a receipt. I'm going to give you a can of this. Just make out. I'd be like, yeah, no problem. But this was consistent.
Yeah.
And then he got banned off TikTok. And you're like, I'm not, like, how can you profiteer so much?
I haven't seen the video. Was it in Wakefield? Or
Wakey
something?
Wines.
Wakey
Wines. Yeah, shout out to Wakey Wines.
I haven't seen the video yet. I've heard about it though. But yeah, I also heard that people were buying them from shops at like retail price and then reselling them online, eBay.
Yeah.
For like £25 a pop.
Well, Aldi got hold of them, didn't they? And there was videos of, so I've got a couple of mates that work at Aldi and like you can't even say the word Prime to them because they want to fight you. Because whenever Aldi have their specials on, doesn't matter if it's like an angle grinder, a welder, a fucking canoe, it's always busy.
Mm.
So I think when I used to go, it used to be on a Thursday, so you go and get whatever it is that's out that week. And there was just queues and queues and queues of people. And they were essentially allowed one bottle of each colour. So I think it was a blue, a green and a multicoloured one.
Oh, yeah. Strap you one.
The guy said I was sat here all morning just boop, boop, boop. But then all they were, there was adverts on Facebook Marketplace and stuff like that. But then I saw one that was like empty Prime bottle, £25.
Really? I've got one in my car.
Mate, honestly, empty Prime bottle, £25. And then there was another guy doing a YouTube video because I fell into a bit of a hole. I fell down a hole pretty bad. And there was a guy saying, right, you want to save your Prime bottles because these ones, they've got a manufacturing issue in the UK and they've got the ridges in the bottle. And if you get one of them, they're the ones. They're the unicorns. They're like £1,000. And then they're going to be a new bottle. I think, fuck you, £1,000, you crackhead. But at the same time, I think to myself, if I go through every bin at the school, I can make myself off a few grand. It was just...
It actually crossed my mind yesterday. Because the guy had got it off and I was like, oh, can I crack it? Because I didn't know what if he was selling them for like whatever. So I drank it. But then I was just like looking at it. I wonder how much I could get for the empty bottle. And yeah, if people are paying, then
there
I
was
got one.
One that said on eBay, the most overpriced empty bottle of Prime, 825 quid.
Jeez. I will say one thing though, it is actually quite nice to hold. It's a, you know,
it's
like,
that matte finish plastic,
good, yeah,
isn't it?
It's a good size. And it's, yeah, it's the finish on the plastic. It's actually a nice, I quite like the branding. And
do you think that it could be a hype trip that they, because obviously,
yeah,
I mean, KSI and Logan know how to work social media. So obviously the way that you make something more desirable is take it away. So even like you look at Tickle Me Elmo back in the day or the Thunderbirds
what,
toys.
So
or
like Kaver, not Kaver. Produce as many
exactly,
to like
yeah, or you've got them,
keep the demand.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, smart. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if they were doing that.
What,
like, they'd put it out production. Well, not totally, but reduce production for a little bit.
Just hold them in a warehouse.
And then release them again at a higher price.
Yeah.
Well, you've got the money back you've missed.
You've got somewhere like Aldi that has essentially taken the UK by storm over the past, I don't know, 10 years. Because obviously back in the day, if you shopped at Aldi, you were a scumbag. Because trust me, I shopped at Aldi and I got my head kicked in for it. Same as Quicksave and Gateway. But like, if you think Logan Paul 10 years ago, Dana, he's not even on Dana White's radar.
No.
And now Dana's been needled by his brother. So
oh, they're official drink of the UFC now, aren't they?
Dude,
yeah, I forgot about that.
Which is kind of fucked up because that body armor, if you remember when we were in Vegas, I bought some of that. I subscribed to the hype. And like you say, it was all right. A couple of dollars, it was good. But when we were at the weigh-ins and all the other stuff, they had like 1,000 body armor towels printed. And I'm pretty sure the UFC made it. It was part of, it was their own company, which is why it's got to be so impressive that Logan Paul has managed to infiltrate that. Dana can obviously not deny the fact that it is hype as fuck.
Yeah.
So now they are the official sponsors.
They've got a deal with Arsenal Football Club as well. They're the official drink of Arsenal now, I think.
What?
Yeah.
Is that KSI's team?
Yeah, I think he's an Arsenal fan. But yeah, I saw the video that they posted.
Which
is kind
of cool.
Because when I got the bottle of Prime, I went on the Instagram page for it and they posted a video of them walking around the Emirates Stadium. And yeah, I think they're the official drink of Arsenal.
Jesus.
It's pretty, I mean, fair play. Like,
oh, mate, I can't take anything away from them.
It's just like, yeah.
It's just a drink. It's just a drink. Like,
yeah, but I suppose it's like, if you think like how when Red Bull came around, that was the same, wasn't it? They were everywhere.
Yeah.
Like they're on like extreme sports and, you know,
everything. Like Stack It, I Sell It, Cheap, Red Bull. Because there was events, because I don't know if I've told you this before, but I used to do motorbike trialing. So basically you turn up at an event and trials, it's not like motocross where you go around a track. It's set out sections of like rocks that you'd have to go and like jump over without putting your feet down. So it was really cool. Really nice community that I was in with everyone, and I had good mates there. And one of the lads' dads, Colin, was a mechanic, and he'd got tickets to a powerboat show.
Nice.
And I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's like a long, thin strip of water.
Yeah.
And these boats, there's one
person.
I've
watched it on TV a few times. It's pretty insane.
Terrifying.
Yeah.
Like the adrenaline, even just watching it, it can go 0 to 60 in fucking, God knows, like a sneeze.
It's like jet engines on water.
Yeah, for real. So during this, we were probably 13, and there was the first time I'd ever seen it, Red Bull tent. But it's like going to Costco with your kids. They don't care if it's gin, if it's fucking paint stripper. They want to try the sample. Do you know what I mean? They're drinking fucking bleach. It's not as good as the chicken nuggets. But as a 13-year-old myself at the time, we saw this stand, went straight up. What's that? Oh, it's free. And they're giving away cans of Red Bull. So we were like, can we have one? How old are you? Which immediately rang alarm bells, which now meant we needed this fucking Red Bull. So we eventually like got parents, because obviously they're sat watching this thing. And we're convincing them, no, you got it. Can you go and get us another one? Can you go and get us another one? Eventually managed to find like under the tent at the back, and we got a load of cans. And we'd had probably 10 cans each. And we were tripping balls. And I got back to my dad's house, and I think we hallucinated that the house behind my dad's was being robbed, because we basically went up to the loft, which was my bedroom, looked out, and there's this big old house, and there's someone going through all the drawers with a torch. And we ended up ringing the police. Rang the police, sponsored by Red Bull.
It's funny. Like, I was just thinking, imagine like the first person to like have a Red Bull.
Yeah.
Like, how insane would, I mean, you said like a noticeable effect on your body. You know, when you've had a Red Bull, you can certainly notice yeah. it.
I don't feel it as much anymore. It's like a
and
coffee.
Then after like, well, I've never. I think the isn't it like 15 and you're dead or something like that?
15
like
Red Bull, yeah.
I think old so rumor. Like I think I only had ever had 3 or 4, but yeah, insane.
I have had it before when I've been driving. I went to an old works party. It was like a reunion after we all got made redundant a couple of years later, and I was driving. So I'd switched from, I think I'd had one beer, and then I had something like 7 or 8 Red Bulls.
Jesus.
And I wasn't even enjoying them. I wasn't drinking them all. I was because there was nothing else.
Yeah.
There was like cheap fucking roller cola or like a shitty diet lemonade. And I was like, do you know what? I'll just have this. It was literally to make my mouth wet. And I couldn't sleep. It was the first time it's ever affected me, but it was because I'd literally like intravenous dripped it into myself for fucking yeah. 7 hours. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of energy drinks that come and go. And I suppose that sort of hype period of something being brand new, I thought we were kind of past it, you know, because of social and everything. Like when people bring something to market, they are prepared for it to be available everywhere.
Yeah, I think it definitely helps the fact that the two guys promoting it are very much in the public eye. They're very much two big
driving
figures
yeah.
with the younger generation. And it's, yeah, it's a good, like they must have made so much money off it.
Yeah.
And what is it? I think it was like over it's only 13 months old. And it's yeah. already, like you said, the official drink of 2 major organisations.
Off Dilute Pop. Fucking Dilute. Imagine if Robinsons are watching this now, like, them motherfuckers. How have you done that?
Yeah.
But, mate, like...
Oh, too much sugar. Oh, yeah. No added sugar.
Mate, they're smashing it. And like I say, it surprised me, especially with Body Armour. And especially that now Dana's sort of mixing with the Pauls.
Mm.
Because that does make it interesting that it's not like Jake Paul wouldn't fancy having a fight after his WWE career, or even now he knows Logan, you might see Jake. And I think it is that pantomime Frankenstein fight that would get massive numbers. Do you know what I mean? Mm. I think it would. So, yeah, he's a wily bastard.
What, you're on about Jake Paul versus Logan Paul? Is that what you
No, not
you
the
mean?
Brothers fighting, but like right. because Dana's got an in with them now. Like at one point, they were Thrush and he was Caniston. Do you know what I mean? Like
right,
he
see,
was trying
yeah,
to
yeah.
cure this fucking problem all the time. Whereas now, he's
photoing him. He's like over yeah. Logan Paul's shoulder.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a funny world, isn't it?
Mate, that's it. But money talks.
Yeah.
And I think, unfortunately, that's always a sad fact that it is a case that, like, I fucking hate that guy. We'll never see it. It's never going to happen. But he paid me some millions. It's like, okay.
It wouldn't surprise me if, like, Logan Paul's, like, the fucking president of the United States or something one day.
Mate, well, you know when they've had Trump. It's not like a big
yeah,
surprise.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
It?
It's not. Yeah.
Mate, we watched Home Alone 2 with the kids the other day and they were like, is that Donald Trump? We're like, yeah. And they went, what? I was like, well, that's his building. And then he owned a building. I was like, yeah, the Trump Towers. They're like, it wasn't called Trump Towers. I was like, it was, I've been. And they're like, so hold on. And you know, when their brain just literally, they know him as this maniac fucking president. And just to unpack that and just let them know that he basically let them use the hotel because he wanted to be in the film because he knew how big the first one was. I mean, he was a Logan Paul or a Jake Paul in our day, or my day especially.
Yeah, I guess so. Just more sleazy, probably.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know how sleazy the Paul brothers are, but fuck me. There is some question marks around them. Not Paul brothers, fucking
yeah,
old Trumpy. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting. And like I say, it's interesting to see what's happened with the Body Armour thing because they really pushed that. That was a big thing. So I think it's the curiosity of it all, isn't it? Like, how much did Harley Davidson used to pay? How much did Monster pay? Because they're all making money hand over fist. These, like, companies like Monster, it doesn't take that much or cost that much to create the product. But the visibility of it is priceless. And especially when you've got someone like Cowboy wearing it or someone else wearing it. So whenever your product is kind of disposable, you can stack it high and sell it cheap because it doesn't matter where you go. Like, you could go to Waitrose and they've got Monster, or you could go to Home Bargains and they've got Monster. I mean, it's £3 difference.
It's pretty mad though, because I don't know what it would be like for the next, this weekend's fights, but surely now Prime will be on the UFC canvas.
I think they've still got the Monster deal.
Right, okay.
But I did see a lot of memes of Hans Mollenkamp going apeshit. It wasn't Hans Mollenkamp, it was Hans Molman from The Simpsons, but it was, he was going mental.
Oh, like, yeah, yeah, it's weird. So surely Monster still on board then, and...
Yeah, because one's an energy drink.
It's like a direct competitor, really.
Yeah, is Prime classed as an energy drink?
Well, I don't know, actually. I think it's like a vitamin drink.
Yeah, so that's where they've... That's the same as the Body Armour and Monster.
Yeah. So they just swapped out, yeah.
Big blue bottle in the middle of the octagon.
Monster's the real shit.
Mate,
Keeps you up for days.
I remember when it was Mickey's Malt Liquor on the canvas, and I was like, I want to try that. Yeah. I mean, it probably
next to the Marlboro sign.
Mate, exactly, yeah. It's like some fucking Joe Camel smoking a big cigarette.
It's funny, there's... have you seen those old, like, baseball commercials where they'll have, like, cigarettes and they'll be smoking...
Man, I lived through
cigarettes
them.
And Marlboro adverts and stuff.
Same as Formula One. Like, there's a John Player special with the black and gold.
Next to a fuel tank.
Yeah. All of it was cigarette sponsored. But again, it's the same. It's something so cheap to produce that can be overpriced and then promoted so easily. Do you know what I mean? Mm. That's why it's such a strange market that you see stuff like that, because it's like when you look at all the fighters that are sponsored by Monster or all the extreme sports, it's like they must be giving fucking vats of this shit away. Mm. I mean, don't get me wrong, out of all the energy drinks, I do like Monster.
Did we mention it on the podcast a few weeks ago? I can't remember if we did, but, you know, Ken Block?
Yeah.
Yeah, he died, didn't he? Yeah. Was it over Christmas?
Yeah, it was a snowmobile.
I think I only saw it about... I did see it when it happened, but yeah, I was just like, oh, shit, yeah, because Monster, he was like the face of
but
extreme sports driving.
But that's another eye-opener for social media, just that real... You know, back in the day when you'd say... there'd be like a column or like one of those newspapers you used to get, like, my son was abducted by a fish finger or some shit. And it was like a weird thing where someone would go, this is a photo taken of such and such moments before they slipped off a cliff and died. Mm-hmm. And like, that was abnormal. You didn't see that because not everyone was videotaping their entire life. And it kind of hit home because obviously he's got kids and everything and he's promoting on social what he was doing because that was his life. You good?
Mm, sorry.
No, but... you're all right. Every part of his life was documented. So there was a video that he'd shared that was hours or if not less before his death. And you see this full of life, high energy guy. Like
the snowmobile. Yeah. It was snowmobile, wasn't it?
And he was talking about this track and how cool it was going to be and all the rest of it. Mm. And then, really sad, man.
It's the same thing with Michael Schumacher though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like you go that long and live like a... like that kind of lifestyle where you're on the limit,
mate.
Every time you're in a car, well, not every time.
In his Escort, all right?
Yeah.
What are you doing? Just parking
it quick. Surprised me with Ken Block, but and then you go through your whole life, and then you go on vacation, and something like that happens. He's such a fucking bastard, isn't it?
Well, you imagine how Christopher Reeves felt being Superman, Superman.
Yeah,
and then the horse was like, you ain't super fuck all, mate. And you think, like, it's such an ironic kick in the bollocks because apparently he was the nicest guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, obviously, he's not taking risks being Superman, but obviously it's kind of ironic when Superman then gets iced
when
out
you're
by
portrayed
a fucking
as
bobo.
That, that person.
Mate, it's you never know. Like, was it Liam Neeson's wife that also had a skiing accident and literally fell over and died? And you think, fuck, man, like, nothing's safe. And I suppose... Well, with anything. That's why, like, the social media side of things. Like, imagine if Steve Irwin had a GoPro on his head and he had three people behind him with cameras and stuff, and literally they would have a fucking GoPro on the stingray's tail. Do you know what I mean? Whereas it was more massive mystery. You just woke up in the morning, it's like, Steve Irwin's dead. You go, fuck off. Alligator, crocodile, nope. No, it was a docile stingray that got fucked off with him.
I suppose it's like... when it happens like that, though, you always remember the people they were. Like Michael Schumacher, you still have the image of him smashing it around a race course, winning championships. I don't think any, like, Michael Schumacher's was proper under wraps. Like, no one, there was no pictures released or anything like that. There was like, it's just...
Which you have to respect to a degree, because
for sure.
The thing is, as much as a lot of people feel that it's our right to know what celebrities are doing and it's our right.
No, it's not.
It's kind of not. No. And it's only when you've seen someone's privacy being invaded or someone just pushing and pushing and you think, fuck, man, like, people are just people. Like, I'll never forget when I first met all the Rough House team and all the rest of it, and I was just like in awe because half of them had been on The Ultimate Fighter Season 9, UK versus US. And obviously I've been following this forever, and I'm like, oh my God, that's Andre Winner. All right. And he's the nicest dude, is that? Yeah. Easy. Like talking to me like he's fucking just met me, like he had, because there's nothing pretentious. And you kind of, you just want to imprint yourself around this group because you want to feel a part of it. And ultimately, they're just living their life.
Mm.
So, like, yeah, it's weird with the Schumacher thing and stuff because, like you say, it's kind of better that there isn't footage of Steve Owen getting iced or Schumacher's accident or anything else, because you do always remember them as these icons and these heroes. Like there was a motorbike stuntman when I was a kid called Eddie Kidd from England, and he was the fucking man, absolute sex symbol, genius, fucking, he could jump over. So when Evel Knievel was doing it here, Eddie Kidd was doing it here, and he was like homegrown hero, all black leathers, black helmet, black bike. It's fucking, he was ninja as fuck. He was proper cool. And he did a jump and he landed funny and it put him in a wheelchair.
Mm.
And like the amount of times you see people interviewing him and he's still with it, but really struggles. And he says, I'd never change it.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I think if it's a conscious choice of yours that you know the risks, you know what you're doing, but you still put yourself through it, you're prepared to whatever happens. I think you've got to do that to be able to do something like that. Same with fighters, you know.
Yeah.
Like it's the same, same mental, yeah.
That's the sort of apprehension I've got kind of with slap fighting, because power slap, I mean, I know it's been out now a little bit, but I'm trying to look in the eyes of the people involved that aren't hitting each other. And I noticed on one of the clips, Forrest Griffin's involved.
Yeah, Dan was telling me earlier. I haven't watched it. I've seen, obviously, the highlights and stuff UFC have posted, but Dan was telling me that Forrest was behind, like, catching people and stuff.
Yeah, and imagine that. Like, a former light heavyweight champion, Hall of Famer, person responsible for getting the UFC to where it is nowadays, at the Tough One finale, right? He met us at the PI. Nicest guy, funny, exactly how you'd expect him to be. Showed us around, fucking wonderful.
There's a video of that if you want to check it out.
Yeah, there is on the other full
tour of the PI with Forrest Griffin.
But like, he should be set for life. And I know that he's kind of Dana's boy to a degree, because he has to be, because Dana's stated, oh, they'll always be all right, because obviously what they did. But it's never in a, I don't think it's ever in like a money, there's your mansion, there's your this, everything's paid off. But no, feeling that I know Forrest and his, do you need
some
food?
I've got fucking gas or something.
It's all good.
My bad for the
we can edit
noises.
Seeing like, just watching Forrest grow and achieve everything he did, when you watch him with this thing, he just seems so uncomfortable. He doesn't seem like he wants to be there. And it's like in such a strange position as well. It's not like he's commentating. He's just...
yeah, it's just catching.
He's just a security guard. He's just like, oh, and Dana, do you want to be involved? He's like, I can do.
Yeah, it's like, you know, like on the set of Star Wars where loads of random people are like stormtroopers.
Yeah, I need another stormtrooper. Well, okay. Yeah, you know that's Gandhi. Is it? Yeah, yeah. You just fancied it. You fucking... So
didn't turn up today. Did you fancy stepping in?
Yeah, mate. And you would for that. Yeah. But it's that when you see, I mean, I don't know, like I was talking to you earlier about it, that I know people that have gone out for a night out and they've got into a bit of bother and they've punched someone once and it's killed them.
Mm.
And I know that sometimes the landing or sometimes the punch or whatever it is, but I'm just kind of... It's been around long enough for me to think I'm either going to get it or I'm going to be worried about it. And I'm more, I don't know if it's because I'm older and I'm just dad mentality.
Nah, I don't get it, man. There's no skill to it. It's just a fad.
Yeah.
Kind of a, I don't think it's got any longevity. And
I mean, I think being able to slap someone, being able to generate that talk and all the rest of it. Yeah. There's an element there that you are, because you're not allowed to lift your feet and do all this, but it's still...
Yeah, but anyone could learn that.
It's a cold cock, isn't it? It's, you're not... when it's like, if you get to punch someone full bollocks in the face, and that's all you're training. Like, if they did an ultimate fighter and it's just guys hitting that. What are we doing next? Just this? Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Ripping some curls. And you think, all right. So, I don't know. I'm worried because of the, like we said before, just the cost of your fame. And when someone like Forrest just stood behind, sort of wincing and just looking super uncomfortable with it, I was like, oh, man, have you changed yourself to the wrong fucking horse? Or is it a case that you don't mind it, but...
It's just chewing gum in it for your eyes. Like, people watching it on YouTube, seeing people get knocked out.
Yeah. And it is the flash knockout, isn't it? That's always why ultimate knockouts, when I used to distribute, like, UFC at work, majority of people were interested in it. I just want to see the ultimate knockouts. I want to see someone flash knockout, maybe a replay, flash knockout, replay. Whereas I had certain people that would want the weekend's event. Or if it was WEC, Strikeforce, Pride, UFC, whatever it was, I would get it. And then I would, because I was essentially just making, I wanted everyone to be involved. I want everyone to see how cool it was. And you get some people that were into it and respected all the different disciplines. And then other people that are just like, have you got that one where someone gets sparkled again? I'm like, can do. There you go. And they'll watch the same thing over and over. And I don't think you're ever going to get away from that, are you?
No. But on another thing that's coming back potentially is the Ultimate Fighter.
Yes.
Yeah.
We mentioned this last week, right?
Yeah, we did actually. And I think we both predicted that it might be Michael Chandler, which I think is pretty cool.
Who would you rather see, him against Tony or him against Chandler?
I just don't think it would be as entertaining as a show if it was Tony. I mean, I think it would be entertaining, but I think it would just be Connor taking the piss out of Tony for the whole show, and then like Tony coming back with really, like, really shit. Well, I think it would be the same like that with Chandler, but I think.
I think Chandler would struggle with being able to come back with something because he's a full tilt gosh darn kind of guy.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, he is a bit. Yeah,
a bit Kellogg's family.
Yeah, McGregor can get both under both of their skin. Tony would be funny, but I think in terms of like an end result and what a fight I'd want to see as an end result, I'd rather see McGregor versus Chandler.
See, I'm struggling because McGregor's quite unknown at the minute because he's obviously ballooned and then come back down, and I kind of want him to stay relevant because I always enjoy his hype train. I'm always interested because seeing him from Cage Warriors to do what he did and then go up and down and all these different exploits. Like, you see the guys hit him with a car the other day.
Yeah.
Someone ran him over. He's like, nah, you're all right. You think, he hit you with a fucking, and the guy won't drink his whiskey. He's punched him in the face. But one of them, fair enough. And when you've got, I think the show would be more competitive, Tony versus Connor, because I think as crazy as Tony is, I think he can give it back. And I think I know he's.
I think it'd be now I'm thinking about it because I hadn't really kind of grasped it in my head like a season with Tony. Now I'm thinking about it, it probably would be brilliant.
I think the show would be better, but then the fight, if the fight was Chandler versus Connor, that would have more implications. That would mean more because Connor's come back, had a word with Chandler. Let's say he beats him, he's put himself straight back in the running. He's made his relevancy really, really well known, which is good for Connor. But I think if you look at it as far as the Chandler and Connor show, I think Chandler would really struggle and almost get like, this isn't fair. Like you're not playing by the rules. This is not cricket. And it's one of them where it's like, well,
good joke, man.
Do you know what I mean?
Proper bro.
Even when you see Faber, like Faber struggled with him because you know that he's quick-witted.
Yeah.
Well, he's just got banter, and obviously not everyone has. But I think the journey for me, if you wanted to see Connor sort of step back into the pool in a more calm way, I think you would get more investment from him because he's interested in fucking with Tony. So it's not about the money. He's coming back to he's having a laugh. He's coming back to meet these new people. He's going to get back into training. And obviously he's got Tony as a bit of a dance partner. And then I think Tony's got really nothing to lose.
I think,
and nor's Connor.
I think it's a good way for McGregor to come back into the UFC.
Oh, definitely.
I think it's a great way to do it. Because the thing is, like, he could have another fight and, well, you know, build up for another fight and then potentially lose again. So I just feel like this, it because it's a bit of a more of a prolonged process exactly. to the actual fight, yeah. and there's, you know,
and Chandler's not going
reality
anywhere.
TV, like it just builds his brand a little bit better before the fight.
Yeah, because Chandler's not going anywhere, is he?
Yeah.
So if you've got Tony, it's almost like that cowboy fight. Like Tony had a legit argument to fight Conor at some point, and they had that. What do you call him, McNugget or something? So maybe yeah. he's not got a good banter.
Well, the thing is, I think the only other thing is that. In Tony's last few fights, like he's not looked the same at all, and he's took some nasty knockouts. Like the Chandler, obviously, knockout was mad, and yeah. the amount of punishment he took against Gaethje.
But he had just, the cardio. He had the cardio for them, which Conor hasn't got.
Yeah,
and since Conor's ballooned, is he gonna? Like, I'm not being funny. When your weight has changed that drastically, and your conditioning has changed. When your cardio is a question when you're a champ, because obviously he got people out of the way pretty quick normally, so he was all right. It was only when Nate Diaz pushed him that you're like, this guy's fucked. So can Tony weather the first storm of Conor sort of, not ring rust, well, maybe, yeah, ring rust is real. So can Tony weather that storm and then sort of wrap Conor up because his cardio was always good and he was quite elusive? Or can Conor avoid the explosiveness of Chandler, because like when you see Chandler against like Dan Hooker or even what he did against Charles Oliveira initially, the guy's fucking...
I think if Chandler, I mean, currently I would say, yeah, Chandler would win that fight just because he's had much more time in the octagon since McGregor's last fight. And I just think McGregor's like, you know, I think Chandler's probably, they're both kind of towards the end of their careers, I guess, then on the down.
Who, Conor
down
and Ferguson?
Scale. Yeah, no, Conor and Chandler.
Like do you think Chandler's on the way down?
I would say so, yeah. I mean, he's not on the way down. I don't mean like he's going to retire anytime soon, but I don't think he'll challenge for the title again. I'm not sure. It depends what happens in the next year, I think.
I think because of his stature.
Well, do you think the winner of the Ultimate Fight will get a title shot?
Well, I think because Conor is seen quite favourably from the UFC.
Yeah.
And because the money doesn't make a difference, and because Conor doesn't particularly, I wouldn't have thought, want to go through the Poirier channel again, I think he could get it so that he can wangle it so that it could say the winner gets a title shot. Mm. And I think... For Dana, blue sky is the fact that Conor wins and then he has a title shot and it's a big fucking card. Or alternatively, it's Tony or Chandler for a title shot, which I think Dana would probably bet, he's a betting man, and he would probably think that Conor can get rid of Tony so he doesn't have to worry about that being an issue. But when you look at when Bisping was a champ, he chose that he wanted to defend against Dan Henderson, who at the time was seventh or eighth ranked in the world. But it was more the point that Bisping wanted that fight back. And obviously he's one of the UFC like foundations. So I think Conor's good at negotiating that sort of stuff. And even if they had to say, all right, yeah, well, it's a championship fight if Conor wins, but then if Tony wins, they can make out he's injured or whatever they need to do to just sort of scrub that. But it's always been favourable towards Conor. And I think... regardless of whichever way they go, it's an interesting fight. But I think because Conor's always been one of them people that will fight anyone anywhere and sort of been willing to do whatever, I think if he has got a preference or the UFC want to be a bit more favourable for him to dip his toe back in, they would go with Tony. Because the problem with Chandler, because he is such a all-American hero, stacked-up dude, I think his longevity is kind of infinite because it's not like he's been sparked and ruined.
No.
But he's shown that his muscle mass or whatever it is that has affected his cardio, like against Oliveira, winning, okay, then he's lost it. Do you know what I mean? And that's kind of what's happened to him a couple of times, which I think you suppose you forget that he's been in Bellator forever.
I think he's been a little bit outclassed when he's come across like the top of the division, like obviously Oliveira, Gaethje and Poirier.
Yeah.
He's only beat Chandler and Hooker.
Yeah.
Right. So, Yeah, I think because he's a big
Chandler
name.
Chandler and Hooker.
Huh?
Chandler and Hooker. Ferguson and Hooker.
Ferguson, yeah, sorry.
He beat himself up.
Yeah, Ferguson and Hooker. Yeah, because he's beat those two, but they're not like the top of the division. When he's come up against it, and I think the only reason he's been pushed there and put in that position in the first place because of what he's done in the sport in other promotions, and you know, but I don't think he's passed. I still think he's got big fights ahead of him, but I just think him and Connor are probably on a similar level in terms of where their fight lifespan is.
Yeah, they've had a decent, and Tony's is even
Ferguson
longer.
I think is a little bit past it now.
Yeah,
but only basing this off his last fights, like he's lost, what was it, 4 or 5 in a row? Yeah. In a row.
And the problem is, before that, he was unbeaten for what, 13?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But then he had that knee surgery.
And he just looks, I think, especially against Diaz. Like, I mean, they, because Diaz was obviously retiring, but then to think that Ferguson coming back again, I don't know, he just looks a bit like on the downscale. I think he should fight someone of a similar.
Yeah. I honestly don't know where Connor's at. Because obviously he's been off for such a long time. He's been into so much other shit. Do you know what I mean? It's like, who's coming back? Because it doesn't feel like it's a little layoff or it was an injury. Like when Frank Mir got iced out by a truck and came back and was really shaky the first couple of fights, but then fought his way all the way back up to the top. So you kind of don't know, because it is fight focus, but it's mental focus and all the rest of it. And a lot of times what's driving you is obviously the purse or surviving or whatever. Whereas obviously Connor's not really worried about that anymore.
Yeah.
So I think it's got to be something special, but
that's why I think he's chosen the path of doing the Ultimate Fighter.
Yeah. It makes it interesting.
Yeah, it does. I think it's a good,
and he can kind of write his own rules, can't he?
Yeah.
Like, you know, if he turns up with all his kids and his family or whatever, it's not like they're going to go, what the fuck are you doing? He's going to go, well,
it's a chance for him to kind of, you know, show up.
Yeah.
give people a good show, I think.
Well, that was why the Aldo McGregor press tour was one of the most watched videos on YouTube at the time, because it was essentially just him acting like a dick. He was just fucking with Jose. And you're like,
proper man, like proper in his head.
Yeah.
Like touching him on the shoulder and the...
and then with his belt. And you think... Fair enough. Damn. Like it's miles apart from the respect and everything from martial arts, but it's entertaining, and you can't help but watch that. You're fixed. So yeah, I think I'm looking forward to it either way.
Yeah, same.
I will tune in, but I think if I was to guess, I would probably go Tony.
What, you think that's who it's going to be?
Yeah,
Connor and Tony.
I wouldn't be surprised if it's Tony.
Yeah, I'll be happy with either. It'd be good to. It'd be good to bring the show back anyway, and especially with McGregor in it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it was good. And I enjoyed it when it was the one against Faber. It was good, man. Yeah. He brings a lot to it. What else have I got? How are we looking for time, dude?
Oh, good.
Okay.
Just over an hour now.
So I got a bit of trivia, but first, a couple of other points. I've already done most of them. Have you seen that Laura Sanko is making a debut on the desk for commentary?
Oh, yeah. I saw a post about it. Yeah, congrats.
That's awesome, right?
Yeah, that's really cool.
And I wasn't even aware, really, that there hadn't been female color commentators, because...
Well, I mean, Megan Olivi?
Yeah.
Yeah. She'd been doing, like, the...
Backstage.
Yeah, backstage and, like, introductions and promos and stuff like that. But she hadn't actually been on the desk commentating.
No, but I quite like, because Laura Sanko is pretty cool because she fights as well. And she's, I know she's not fought in the UFC, but she trains hard.
Yeah.
And she's really knowledgeable. So it was really, I was really pleased for her when I saw that pop up, because it was one of them, you know, when you're like,
Yeah, it's cool.
No, fair play to you.
It's like, obviously Veronica does the commentating in Aries in France, which,
it's awesome.
Yeah, it's great.
There doesn't always need to be a reason why not to. Do you know what I mean? Like, the campaign she's gone through to try and get this job, it kind of seems a bit bonkers that she's having to jump through hoops. But the fact she's got there now, because sometimes, you know, when you're listening, like DC, don't get me wrong, as a fighter, phenomenal. But as a commentator, like, it's literally like I'm watching it with one of my brothers that isn't really into it. They like it. But they'll only ever reference an event they've seen before. So they go, what's his name? Walks on his feet a lot. two hands. What's his name? I'm like, what? What? He's like, you know, fella, you got eyebrows. Like,
yeah, there's a bit of a comedic element to it when him, especially with certain people, like, because I've gone off Rogan a bit now as well, precisely because of that. And, you know, ever since that meme picture of them where they're like, what fight was it?
That one.
Yeah, that one where it's like all of them and like DC is like falling over and stuff. I think ever since that, every time the camera goes to them now, they're trying to get that same reaction.
Yeah.
And it's just like, man, it's over.
Yeah, I think like even when you watch the ride-alongs that we used to do, like someone gets sparked and it isn't that you don't jump out your seat and do a backflip. You're just like, fair play.
It's like there's no like, someone just talking you through the fight technically, like constantly.
No.
Like Dan was really good at that. Like just constantly giving you information about what's going on in the fight. And like people like Cruz is good like that. Felder I quite enjoy. But yeah, it's just like you're kind of listening to, it feels like when like Rogan and DC are on sometimes, you listen to a separate conversation. It's just going on during the fight.
When Bisping's arguing about a barbecue place or something. I know it's all normal and I like random COD shit. But the problem is, sometimes having that like analysis of someone going, right, watch his left arm, right, he's going to try and posture up now and he's going to take this. And it's really the fact that they know that and they see these tiny nuances and like obviously an educated audience will see it and you can tell like, don't cross your legs when you're doing rear naked, don't do this, don't do that. And it's fascinating. But you know when, if you can't remember someone's name, so I think what I'm trying to say is like when you've got someone like Laura who's obviously been into this for such a long time and is obsessed and does all her research, like V, so does all her research, fucking everything's on the nose, perfect, planned out, like you'd expect, a fucking really good job. And then you've got someone, because they've been in it, they just get to talk about it, but then they're just basically hanging out with their mates, chatting shit, and you're like Dominic Cruz, I would love listening to him, but he kind of, not great, but he's just kind of slow. And it's just a bit beige all the time.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? There's no like literally someone could put a firework up his arse and he's like, right, that felt like a rocket. That's going to be sore. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas like you say, Felder seems to cover all bases. He's pretty good. And I mean, Bisping can be pretty comprehensive at times, but it depends who he's paired with to who he's going to argue with.
Yeah,
he is just kind of aggro all the time.
Yeah, you need a balance of personalities, I think, on a commentary team.
Do you think Rogan's on his way out? Do you think he's just kind of, because obviously he only does the numbered events now, not all of them.
Yeah, I mean, I think he'll continue it as long as, the thing is, he's just like the biggest like voice in the UFC and like from a commentary perspective anyway, just like hearing his voice, it's like listening to football and you hear like John Watson or whatever. Like there's a certain voices that you automatically relate to.
Have you noticed how little
I think
you
he'll
hear
be
him?
Doing it for a
bit longer.
Yeah.
Have you noticed how little you hear him nowadays? Like I sat the other day watching a fight and like he didn't say anything for a good 10 minutes. I don't know if it's off having a piss or whatever, but
it was baked on the side.
Just absolutely fucking spandangled. Just Tyson.
I mean, I'm pretty sure he's baked everyone
Gotta
he
be.
Does.
Gotta be. And fair play to him. I mean, hats off. If you can do that for however many hours it is, it's a big old event. But it felt to me that at one point he was doing anything he could to be a part of it, which obviously he did the first, was it 10 shows for free or whatever, when he had hair. And obviously he's become synonymous with the sport and then he would travel anywhere. And then all of a sudden, like with the Spotify deal and the podcast, he was like, listen, I'm not going to do any of that anymore.
Yeah,
and
man, then, he doesn't need to. No. Like,
but I kind of like, I always like, it's like when he was him and Goldie.
What was it, 100 million, that Spotify deal?
Something like that. And then didn't they kick him off? Didn't they get rid of him anyway? They're like, yeah, you got to go because you said.
To be honest, I haven't listened to a Rogan podcast in ages.
No.
I used to listen to them like the Brian Cox ones and like Louis Theroux.
Yeah.
Like those kind of ones were pretty cool. But yeah, I haven't listened to a Rogan podcast in ages.
I think it depends how you land on him. Like sometimes he is completely coherent and like you can get on board with his points or at least acknowledge the point he's trying to make. And other times you're like, oh, you're full pub talking. You're like fucking 7 pints deep. Like, oh, I ever told you about the fucking pie I made in the garden? You're like, what? Yeah, I dug a big hole and made a fire pit. Like, no, you didn't, you fucking idiot. You live in a flat. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I still just daydream of the days of Goldie and Rogan. Like you said, you've got someone talking you through it. You still got Goldie shouting about corn nuts or fucking whoever it is, which I kind of feel for Anik sometimes because he is really comprehensive and good at what he does. But because he has to do the Billy bullshit side of things, it's like, and Nemiroff, vodka since 1840, whatever the fuck it is. And you're like, oh, dude. It just kind of cheapens him a bit because he's the one that, it's like when the teacher says, can I have a volunteer? And he put his hand up and they're like, oh, you're going to get all the shit jobs. And Rogan and DC are sat at the back smoking like, fucking good guy. Yeah, yeah, you go and do that, mate. Yeah. Bring her an apple tomorrow. Do you know what I mean? And I just feel for him a bit. Like, he's made his own fucking choices and obviously he's living the best
life. Anik's great. I like Anik a lot. He's really good.
He seems like he is a totally different person. Like when you see him on Instagram or something and he's swearing and he's being himself, it just, you can see how professional he is and how much he puts that professional hat on when he steps into the arena. So, I mean, I was watching him, fuck me, years before. He ran an ESPN show in probably 2003, 2004. And I used to try and get that before the weekend and it was him. And you could tell that he was desperately trying to like promote this, the UFC, because ESPN were famous and EA were like famous for rejecting UFC game and stuff like that. No, we don't want anything to do with this. Then release their own game.
Yeah.
And
now obviously not making FIFA anymore either.
Well, you don't need to, do you really? Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Just rename the players. Like, this is Dave.
Just update it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. It is interesting, but yeah, we'll see. Good luck to Laura. Hopefully it goes really well.
Really good addition to the team, yeah.
I think you'll hear a much more comprehensive, like someone that's really studied and really trying.
Yeah, I think so.
Not in a try hard, shitty kind of way. Like, I think she will be. Who's she paired with? Do you know?
I don't know. I suppose it depends on. Is she on this? Is her debut is this Saturday or is it?
Yeah, I think it's this Saturday. Okay. It might be 2-8.
Yeah, she'll probably be on the fight night. Yeah.
Yeah, just do a trial run. But yeah, well, obviously she's not listening to this, but good luck to her. I hope it all works out because she's good in the sport. The last one, before trivia, quick one. Did you know that Masvidal has exited and part ways with FRM, First Right Management, which is...
No, didn't I?
Abe, you remember we met him a few times?
Yeah, nice guy. I know Mystery spent a bit of time with him as well.
Yeah, well, he was John Jones' manager, Demetrius Johnson at one point, Aljo's manager. And yeah, so he's a long-time manager and he is no longer with him.
Yeah, well, Masvidal was a bit of an interesting one at the minute because he came out recently and said about the McGregor fight as well. Him and McGregor would be good on a tough. And that would be quite interesting because obviously McGregor's blown up and he said he wanted to come back at welterweight anyway.
That'd be awesome.
That would be cool because I feel like Masvidal's in a little bit of a weird position in the division as well at the minute. Like, obviously Leon Edwards and Usman are fighting again and Gilbert Burns has just fought Magny, beat him.
But they're all heavy grapplers as well.
Yeah, but then...
I
don't know if Masvidal wants that fight, so it's a little bit of a difficult situation for him.
I think the Conor want to be interesting, but the problem is I don't think you could do tough with him because I think Masvidal would kill him. Legit, straight kill him.
Yeah, well, this is the thing, that's what he said, didn't he? He said, I wanted the Conor fight, but Conor didn't want me.
Of course not.
Yeah.
Because whenever you can rip someone and take the piss and basically break them down mentally and you know they're not going to do anything, you're all right. But Masvidal went into a restaurant and put hands on Colby.
Yeah.
Masvidal was at the backstage with Rocky and fucking slapped him, like, or punched him, three times. Yeah. What? That's, like, there is no rules for him. And the problem is, he's like, oh, give a fuck. And he can't help but tune into that pantomime. But I think they would constantly be fighting, which is good for us.
What was the reason that he left that management company anyway?
So essentially, obviously the managers are paid for negotiation, deal negotiation, sponsors, all the rest of it, appearances and different things and fight contracts and whatever. And watching the industry as long as I have, and knowing the UFC especially, I can kind of see where the management company would be struggling without Masvidal. Because, and I don't mean physically, but I mean, if Abe goes in to talk to Dana to negotiate for a contract, it's not the same weight as Masvidal being sat there talking to Dana. So back in the day when it was Abe's job to be able to sell fights and do this, this and this, obviously he's getting a percentage of money to do that. So it's always justified, arranging this, arranging that. And what Masvidal's saying now is he's having to fly to see them, fly back. And because he's having to do it himself, because essentially he's become, well, he's become his own entity, hasn't he? He's like the BMF and all the rest of it. And obviously his stock has risen massively after the Darren Till fight. So when you look at that, for Abe to sit there and go, well, I'll go and talk to him, they're not going to take him as seriously as talking to Masvidal. Mm. But Masvidal sees it as, what the fuck am I paying you for? Which I can see both sides, because obviously you need the talent there to argue his corner, because he's the reason he's got there because of how he portrays himself. And obviously they're not going to take the manager as seriously. And you know what Chinese whispers are like, or if you're the middleman for something, it's always kind of diluted. So I don't know how bad it is, but I know that he is now representing himself. He feels like he's represented himself for the past couple of fights. So, I mean, it's a difficult one. I've seen some of my managers be the best thing that's ever happened to a fighter, and I've seen other. Now, I was working with one guy. I won't name any names, but I was working with one guy, and I was doing the banner and the shorts, and he basically said to me, I'll look after you. I'll sort you out, get your tickets. I'll do this and that. And obviously I was fresh-faced and all the rest of it. I was like, yeah, cool. Ticket sounds good. And I did the banner. And then I can't remember what we charged, but it wasn't a lot. It was like, if it was 200 quid for sure, like stupidly cheap, like you wouldn't get it anywhere. And then the fighter, a year later, had fought two or three times, messaged me, and said, mate, how much did you charge? I nearly said their name. How much did you charge such and such? And I was like, I didn't. He said he was going to get me tickets, and then he ended up getting me tickets for like San Francisco, and I live in England. And he's like, oh, really? I was like, yeah. He's like, you didn't get anything? I was like, no, I got nothing, but it was nice to meet you. Appreciate the time, blah, blah, blah. And that was it. And he'd basically been like putting on his invoice, banner and sponsor, blah, 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 4 or 5 grand. This 2 or 3 grand, and you're like, oh, okay. And so, I mean, it's natural, you get shysters in every industry, and like I say, I'm not going to say who it was, but it's like the Don Kings of, do you know what I mean? They're just, when you're working with such big pots of money, if you're going to get 65 grand in your paycheck, or you're going to get 63, that 2 grand means a lot to me,
yeah,
but it means nothing to you, to quote Skilo. So it's tricky, man. It's interesting. I see the pros and cons of management, but it gets to a point where I think when you are fighting your own corner, and I think the UFC kind of respect that in a strange, fucked up kind of way, when Conor goes and kicks the door and says what he wants, or Nate does. And
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You're working like for like. So yeah, so interesting one. I thought I'd just let you know, because obviously you've hung out with them and you know the guys.
Yeah.
But are you ready for a little bit of trivia?
Yeah, for sure. Let's go for
it. We've got time for it.
Yeah, I think so. What are we on?
4:45.
Okay.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. So, now I'm aware that you have obviously entered the MMA world, roughly the Conor era, but there are a few others, and I think
I know a little bit of history. I've done my research, but
okay,
not every... Am I going to regret that statement?
No. I've not made this too hard, I don't think. So, in the Tough One finale...
Okay.
You know the main event? The Ultimate Fighter 1 finale, synonymous for catapulting the UFC into the stratosphere.
The finale, the... Yeah. Oh, okay, was... Yep, yeah, I know.
Go on.
I know. Was it Forrest and Stefan Bonner, guy who died?
Yeah, Stefan Bonner.
Yep, Stefan Bonner.
So that wasn't the question. The question was, do you know the co-main?
Oh, wow. Will it be people I know or have heard of?
Yeah, really no. Yeah, especially in Dan's world.
Condit?
No.
No?
Not one that Dan's fought, one that Dan was going to fight.
Going to fight?
Yeah.
Nate? Nick?
No. Recently going to fight.
Oh, Diego.
Yeah. Who did Diego beat?
Diego Sanchez beat... Well, I know the opponent.
You should do, yeah. You got done for plagiarism.
Diego Sanchez and...
It sounds like a sanitary towel. Ken Flo.
Ken, oh, Kenny Florin, yeah, I've heard yeah. Kenny
yeah. Florin. So yeah. Diego.
Of course, yeah.
Diego beasted him.
Right, yeah.
And okay. He didn't really get much notice because he basically took him down and smashed him up. And obviously then Stefan Bonner and Forrest took over. Okay, so second question. How many seconds was it for Connor to spark Jose?
13.
Good lad. Okay, true or false? Randy's first fight was in the UFC, Randy Couture. So his first mixed martial arts fight.
True.
It is true.
Yeah.
Okay, who was the first ever fighter to beat GSP?
Matt Serra.
Matt Hughes beat him first.
Oh,
so Matt Hughes armbarred him with 1 second to go on the clock.
Right.
And then obviously GSP came back from that and he fought and he was begging for the title shot. And then he took Matt Hughes out with a headshot. That's when Sarah
rematch,
then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
So, but pretty close.
Same first name.
Exactly. Was it Matt? It was.
Yeah.
Okay. The first ever woman's fight in the UFC.
That was Liz Carmouche versus
Go with your gut. You're right. Don't overthink it.
Well, I don't know. Now I've got a few names popping around.
Liz Carmouche was that's good that
yeah,
you got
Liz
that.
Yeah, Liz Carmouche. I know this. It wasn't Joanna, was it?
Ronda.
Ronda. Oh, right. Of course, yeah. Fucking idiot.
Okay, so...
I thought she was just the first female champion.
No, I'm pretty sure it was Ronda. I'm doubting myself now thinking it's Misha Tate, but it wasn't.
No, it was. I'm pretty
Ronda,
sure that, yeah.
Because then she obviously was crowned the inaugural. Okay, so obviously you came in the Connor era.
Yeah.
The era just before that was like Ronda and Brock.
Right, okay.
So Brock Lesnar
and Jones
was renowned for just renowned for fucking crushing people. But who was his first win in the UFC?
Brock Lesnar.
Yeah.
Oh, someone big. I don't mean in size. I mean like name wise.
He's more famous for kissing someone in Pride. Have you seen the viral video of the two fighters face to face?
I was going to say Shogun, but it wasn't Shogun,
no,
was it?
No, different weight class.
Come on. It's a heavyweight.
Yeah, so there's two fighters that square up in Pride, big white dude, and he leans forward and they've got the face on and he just kisses him. The other guy kisses.
What nationality is he?
American. I don't know if you'll know his name, I didn't know if you'd know, but his name is Heath Herring.
Heath Herring, no, I would have never have got that.
But that's, so his first fight was actually against Frank Mir, and that's when Frank Mir was
absolutely
getting smashed up, and he basically said he's getting hit in the back of the head. They restarted it, and he did the most beautiful sweep, and obviously knee-barred him or whatever it was.
I just always, Brock Lesnar fight, is the fight that always rings in my head is the Overeem, where he just battered him with his knees.
Yeah, I felt like I kind of got, because I was such a big Randy fan, that when I saw that, I was like, yeah, there you go. Motherfucker. Do you know what I mean?
He got
it back. Okay, so what round did Masvidal beat Nate for the BMF title?
Second.
Third.
Oh, no, I was going to go with that. Shit. I was there as well.
Mate, there you go. That's why I thought I could put that one in.
Damn it. Yeah. Okay. I thought we got him in the second.
So you hit me with, was it Ali's age last week? So John Jones' age when he first became champ.
It's 20. It's either between two numbers. I think it's 23.
It is 23. Yeah, we're going to say 21.
I was going to say 21, yeah.
I'm always convinced it's 21. And then when I see the stats, I'm like, it's
23 in it.
Yeah, it's 23. Yeah. Well done. Max Holloway, who did he lose his first UFC fight to? So rewind before his champ, all that.
Yeah, was it Cub Swanson? No, he guillotined Cub Swanson, didn't he?
Mate, I will take that as a way out, getting yourself out of jail. That's good. You're back on neutral ground. So it wasn't Cub because he did beat Cub.
So, did he win his first? He won his first fight.
I think so. This is his first loss.
Oh, this is his first loss?
Yeah.
In the UFC?
Yeah.
McGregor?
No, so it's a toss-up in my head. If I was asked this, it would have been between McGregor and Poirier. Because Poirier actually beat him first. Because then when they fought, you know when they fought for the title that time?
Yeah, Poirier
beat him again.
Yeah, Poirier's got two wins over.
Exactly, yeah. So it was...
Oh, of course.
Because actually, Dan got me the hat. It was a Boney Acai hat from that fight because I was desperate for one, and Max Holloway signed it, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, Max is cool.
Yeah.
He's got a fight coming up with Arnold Allen.
Which is going to be big, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's going to be big.
I imagine they'll probably, Arnold Allen's got to get a title shot after that, surely.
Mate, if he can get past Holloway, wow. Excuse me. And the thing is, the way that Allen is climbing and Max is, don't get me wrong, Max has not dropped at all. Obviously, he's had really tough fights, especially against Volkanovski. But I think it's a good reset for Max because it's not Volkanovski. It's someone else he can focus on.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's interesting, man. Interesting to see what happens. Okay, couple more.
Yeah.
What round did Holly Holm KO Ronda?
First round.
Second.
Oh,
dude,
no.
So close. Okay. True or false, Dominic Cruz's first loss in the UFC was to Cody Garbrandt. Are you nodding for true?
Oh, right. True or false?
Yeah.
True or false? Oh. His first loss in the UFC.
So you imagine how long he's been around, all the people he fought, obviously from the WEC crossing over.
Mm.
So was...
Next he lost to...
He lost a Faber in WEC
with
a one-arm guillotine, right? But this is the UFC. So obviously when it's all been moved across, it's one of them where Garbrandt came along quite late in his career. But yeah, true or false, was his first loss.
Yeah, it was.
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is fucking impressive, man.
Yeah.
Especially, I mean, Garbrandt's performance that night was more impressive, but the fact that he didn't drop it. I mean, obviously he was probably fighting once every 4 years because his knees were fucked. Okay.
Interesting.
First fighter to hold multiple titles at the same time in the whole history of the UFC.
Ooh, in the whole history.
I've only said that to be a prick because really you should know the answer straight away.
It's Randy, right?
No. Randy had multiple titles, but at different times. He never held two belts.
Well, it's McGregor then?
Yeah.
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 It was like, because I was thinking, I saw some weird stat about like multiple champions, and it was like Randy was the first one to hold in, not at the same time, but in two
Randy,
different weight classes.
BJ Penn, obviously Connor,
but Connor was to have it both at the same time,
like Dan Henderson in Pride, two, which are the fucking Pride belts, like the size of a car. And finally, because you've done pretty fucking good there, dude, I gotta be honest, especially because I wasn't a nasty bastard, but I thought there's some tricky ones.
What was this one am I on at the minute? Out of...
I haven't kept count. I can have a
look.
It's
all right.
Who did Khabib beat to get the belt?
Wait, I've got to rewind my brain back here.
You rewind. I'll tie up. So
I'm going to go backwards. So he retired against Gaethje. Before that was Poirier. Before that, he got stripped after McGregor. So he won it back against Poirier. And before McGregor, he beat Alvarez.
No. Say that first name again, but just the first two letters.
Alvarez.
No. I don't need to say Alvarez again because I'd have said say Alvarez. So take the first two letters from Alvarez. Ow. Is the first name of the guy he beat to obtain the belt.
Aldo?
No. Al is his first name. Then there's another name that follows that.
Am I being really stupid here?
No, because it's a tricky one, because I always know that when Mister used to say his name, he said it really wrong. And it was like...
Ali?
No, it was Al, and then he would say... I
think Al?
His surname begins with an I, but Mister would always say with an L.
This is lightweight belt, right?
Right.
Before...
He started doing real estate in New York.
Oh my God, I can't think.
Al Iaquinta.
Iaquinta, oh right.
Mystery used to call him La Quinta.
Oh, okay, because it was vacant and right? They both fought for that.
Yeah, and he actually went the distance. Yeah. And Khabib was like, he's a tough motherfucker.
He went five rounds with Khabib, of course, yeah.
And then he went and smashed Conor up.
Damn, I remember actually, yeah, I remember that.
Tricky one though, right?
Yeah, it was a tricky one, yeah.
Good. Well, dude, that was a good one. I think that was 13. I think you got a couple of half marks, but probably about 7 or 8 points.
Yeah, nice.
Which I'm...
Decent.
Yeah, please, man. That was good.
Yeah.
Yeah, well done. If you followed along or if you got... If you were screaming at the fucking screen.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, it's fucking Ally Quinta. It's La Quinta. He does New York real estate. Good friends. Yeah, man. So that's all good. I think that's it. I think... We're going to have to start making moves because I've got some.
Yeah, I need the loo as well. So
we do sit most weeks busting. The pair of us will race.
Yeah, I drank too much water before we started. Oh,
mate, that's it. I've been drinking cold tea. So, yeah, so I don't think there's anything else. Obviously, next week.
Yeah, we haven't got one next week.
Yes, we're going to be.
I think we're going to start doing these shows bi-weekly as well. So every 2 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah, every fortnight instead of every weekly. Just. Time scale and stuff going on, but yeah, we're going to keep the shows a little bit, probably a little bit longer because it's going to be bi-weekly, but
I've plenty to catch up on.
Yeah, a lot more to catch up on.
Yeah, well, it has been a pleasure as always, and we will catch you next time.
Yep,
take it easy.
Nice
dude.
One, man. Take care.
I felt like a reptile. Like a reptile. I felt like a reptile.